people, it's your girl, Fredrika McClary Easley, back with another special episode of Ask the Attorney with Bryna Dahlin. How are you, Bryna?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. As you can see, I don't have my normal background, so I am out here in these streets, actually in NYC, but having an amazing time and nice. Some amazing meetings. So it's all good. Tons of questions for you today. Excuse me. But I gotta take care of a little housekeeping. So
all right.
First and foremost, people, we are on all of the platforms: YouTube, Apple Music, Spotify, and Amazon Prime Music. Please go on, like, subscribe, thumbs up, do all of those good things. Leave comments. I read them. Let us know what you think about what we're doing, the content we're covering, and or if you have questions, comments, concerns that you would like to be brought and have Bryna give her take on it. Second thing, People's Ecosystem, please go over to the website, check out our merch, our wellness line, our CBD, and if you are in Cali, you can also check out our THC. So please go over there and do that. And without further ado, here we are. Okay. So Bryna, my first question, you see these terms, and as you know, we're talking about New York released not too long ago draft regulations around branding, about marketing and advertising, things of that nature. And so you are having more and more of a covering, if you will, or a claiming of, I'm the first person who said that, or I said this, or those are my words, I wrote that piece, mm-hmm. and whatever the case may be. So I wanted to just kind of dig into the idea and or importance and some of the particulars around copywriting.
Okay. Copywriting. Sure. And, you know, I think a lot of folks might also get copyright and trademark confused. I know we talked about trademark maybe one or two episodes ago. Trademarks will generally protect, when you hear about brands, that's generally what we're talking about, is there's trademark protection that you want to get for that. The logo, taglines, you know, what you're calling your product. Copyright is different. Copyright is a, it is protection that you can get for an artistic form of expression. So movies are copyrighted, novels, artwork, things like that. So in the cannabis sector, though, there are definitely some things that can be copyrighted. For example, if you've written an original piece that maybe you've got on a website, maybe it's part of the materials that your company uses, you can copyright that. You can copyright a lot of what you create on your website as well. So like oftentimes when you're visiting a website, you will see, like if you scroll down, you'll see copyright and then the year. That goes for photographs as well. Photographs, you can get copyrights for photographs. Packaging is, in theory, you can get copyrights for packaging, but it's a lot harder than for the other two forms that I just mentioned, because it really has to be like a unique form of expression. So if you just take standard design elements and put it in your own way on packaging, that is very, very likely not going to pass muster. The appearance has to be really, really unique. And not so much the actual packaging itself, which is more functional, because you can't get copyrights for functional, like utility things. It's got to be an artistic form of expression. So packaging is something that you can get as well, particularly if you've got like a photograph or an image on there that you've incorporated in a certain way, that you can get copyright on. Copyright is definitely easier to obtain than a trademark.
Okay.
Less expensive. It is something that, generally speaking, unless you've got an issue, you don't even need a lawyer for, frankly. Like, you can go on the Copyright Office website. There's lots of instructions. It's inexpensive to file a copyright for your work. And it's you can do it for cannabis, right? Like there's no rules around, is it legal? Is it not legal? Like we have on the trademark side. So you
go ahead, continue.
Yeah, so you can get copyright. It doesn't matter if the subject is cannabis. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, technically in violation of the Controlled Substances Act. You can get a copyright for that. And you know, I should say what's the benefit of a copyright? Because you have a right to ownership for the material you create, regardless of whether you obtain a copyright. That's your right. That's your common law right. You created that, and that's yours. But there are benefits to registering these types of materials to get copyrights. Number one is it's assumed then that you own that, right? If you are ever in a dispute with someone, you're like, hey, I got the copyright. That assumption can be overcome, but there is like an assumption in court. This is yours and you own it as of this date.
Yeah, it's an additional burden of proof to disprove.
Yeah, you know, exactly. So it makes it a little bit easier for you.
Yep.
It also, because it is a federal statute, it's a statute, it has by statute damages, shifting of attorney's fees. So you can get statutory damages if somebody infringes on your copyright, as opposed to just, you know, I was damaged by X amount, which can be very hard to prove. So you get statutory damages. And it tells the world that this is yours. Particularly if you're developing your company, you're building your company, you know, maybe you've got dreams of selling it one day. Having a nice, robust IP portfolio always looks good. So having some copyrights in there that you can put into that portfolio is a really nice add. So copywriting is it's easy to do. It generally goes through, like, you know, some of the packaging that I just, some things like that can get harder, but generally speaking, it's a much easier process than the trademark process. And it's something that cannabis companies, you know, if they're not thinking about, they definitely should think about, okay, what do I have here that's copyrightable? What's worth me doing this? You know, it's like, I don't know how much it may be, $50 to file a copyright, right? It's not like a big burden.
Yeah, and definitely worth it, because there's a return on that investment. Like you said, it makes you, you know, it makes you look more pleasing in the eyes of those who you may want to acquire you, right? Because like everyone.
Yeah, and it also shows you got your shit together. Exactly. Like, hey, I'm taking care of my stuff, right? Yeah. So that's nice too. You know, I will say one problem is often, you know, when folks do it themselves, there can be a confusion over, is this a trademark or is this a copyright? So, you know, that is like one reason, like the copyright office will reject things. They'll be like, hey, you know what? This really isn't a copyright. You could go to the trademark office for this one.
You know, I was going to ask about that because the last time we spoke, we were talking about IP, intellectual property, but we were talking about, you know, the difference between it being your individual IP, right? Versus if you're the employee of a cannabis business, okay, like what's that line between your IP and the company's IP, or what, you know, what kind of becomes the company's IP?
Okay. Generally speaking, if you are an employee and you create intellectual property that is in the scope of your job, you're doing it as part of your job, you as the employee do not own that IP. The employer owns that IP. So when you are an employee, you don't, that's part of your job is to create, you know, if you create something. Now,
let me just kind of put this, okay. Let me kind of break this down. So you're at work, y'all are having just a session where you're bouncing ideas, you're brainstorming, okay? You come up with some dope-ish, but this is in the scope of your workday with other employees and or managers. That is not your IP.
It is not your IP.
That's important to know.
It is not your IP. it, you know, it can get a little bit gray. For example, if you happen like to come up, you've got a totally different function at the company and you happen to come up with something that wasn't part of your duties, you know, you could have an argument there. If you come up with something that is totally outside of your job, but related to cannabis in some way, you know, you could have an argument there. But if you are sitting in a meeting with a group of people brainstorming ideas, any of those ideas that actually become like intellectual property, because ideas you cannot protect, you have to express that idea in some way. That is the company's. Yes.
Now that's important to note because, you know, you hear stories of people knowing that they want to actually own in the space, but they start out working at another dispensary or working with a cultivator just so they can get that real experience mm-hmm. in other areas of the supply chain. And so, you know, you're there now, but you already know you want to go somewhere else. And so, you know, you have to be mindful, or one would be mindful of how they participate in that business that could potentially at some point be a competitor.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. If you share that idea in the scope of your employment, if it turns into something that is protectable, it is not yours. Generally speaking, it is the employer's.
Wow.
And I will say it's a little bit different for independent contractors because we're talking about employees now. And I know a lot of folks, especially when they're starting out, they're going to be relying a lot on independent contractors. For independent contractors, it's different. That is an arm's length.
That's 1099, right?
Right. Exactly. That is like an arm's length transaction. So ownership of IP, when you're talking about an independent contractor relationship, needs to be addressed in the contract with the independent contractor.
Mm. Okay. So real world example, you hire a contractor to create your website. And they also are doing some copy. And maybe there's a very catchy tagline that they come up with that's associated with your company, but they were 1099. That was not a W-2 employee. That IP, if they so choose to, I guess that would be trademarking and not copywriting, but mm-hmm. if they wanted to trademark it, they're the ones who actually have the space to do so.
If you did not address it in the contract, typically you're going to want to have, when you have an independent contractor that's working for you, it is a very basic term and you are going to want to make sure it's in there. Anything you create in the course of doing this project for me is mine. So you want to make sure that's in the contract. And if you don't have it in the contract, there could be an argument that yes, they can run with that. They can take it.
So be mindful, people, because, you know, and this is not to dissuade from it, but oftentimes we may get a friend to do this or a friend to do that. And that's what they do. Sometimes you don't know that your stuff is so good until, you know, it kind of hits and you see the interaction and the engagement that it gets. Mm-hmm. And that could potentially be a problem.
Yeah. And you know, and then one other thing I would say for the employer-employee relationship, like I'm just talking about like general employment law, but if you have a special situation, for example, maybe you're bringing IP to the table when you get hired, or like, you mm-hmm. know, you've got this patent, or you know, those are things that should be addressed at the start of employment. Because an agreement between the employer and the employee can always modify, you know, the general concept that the employer owns everything. So it's definitely something that should be addressed. And if there is a concern around, you know, hey, I've got this IP, or look, if I might help you with this, but I want to be able to keep that too. Those are things you can negotiate in a contract.
Yeah. And before you start, typically you have more leverage, because like once you're in there and now you're trying to make changes,
absolutely,
you're going to be less amenable to it.
100%.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. All right. Sounds good. So let's dig into trademarks a little bit more, because we started talking about this, but we did not finish.
Okay.
And you started laying out this complexity in terms of when you have multi-state operators and things are getting trademarked, where exactly do the trademarks like reside? Like, where is ownership of the trademarks? Because you have so many other pieces.
Right. And I would say not just like MSOs, but any company that develops a valuable brand is very likely, if they have good counsel, is going to be structuring their company in a way that the IP is separated out. So there's a separate company maybe existing under the parent company that's going to be holding all of the IP. And that's normal and that's smart. But you know, if you're across,
why is that? Why do you want to separate?
So you have more flexibility in terms of how you can use that IP, right? I'm going to license it here. There's more flexibility to do what you want with that IP. If it's tied, like here's my cannabis license, here's my IP. It's all in this one little, one little single location site. There's less flexibility.
Gotcha.
But it's important, like if you are, for example, negotiating across the table for a company like that, or maybe even you're like, purchasing one of these smaller companies that maybe developed a brand, to know where the IP is, because just because you've got the license, or you've got a contract with the, whatever entity's holding the operational license, it doesn't give you access to that IP as well. The IP is generally negotiated separately. Often if you're going to use someone else's IP, you're going to have a separate licensing agreement, and it's going to be with that separate company.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. I did not know that. I had no idea. I was thinking more of the, like the plant touching, non-plant touching side, and how a lot of times companies are structured to like keep those things separate.
That's true too. That's true too. But generally speaking, even in the non-cannabis world, you will find IP.
Separate companies with IP. Okay. All right. And so last but not least, I wanted to dig into this because I literally just put in the newsletter a story about this, right? So we know it's going to happen. We know it's going to continue to happen, especially as other big industries like spirits and oil and cigarettes, like as they come in, as more states regulate, we're going to see these mergers and acquisitions. It is going to be a lot. And so recently there was a company that was a part of one of these like acquisitions. And there was a story that came out on CEO packages, like their compensation packages, severance mm-hmm. packages, and just how their compensation is structured in general, And so I wanted to kind of like just get your take on this, because is this the norm? Like, some of these packages.
You're talking about, like, really big packages?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you have stock options, and you have this.
Yeah.
And so it's like, is this the norm? Will this be the norm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so, because it's, as we move farther along in the cannabis industry and get more mature, we're going to start looking like every other industry. And this is not abnormal. Yes, large packages for executives when companies get bought out.
Or when they go public, that was the other thing.
When they go public, yeah, totally. I would expect that we're just going to be seeing more and more of that as the industry matures, because we're going to start looking more and more like other industries.
So for people who are coming into this, and maybe with the goal of selling, right, of being acquired, are there, I guess I would say, a couple key pieces that you would bring to their attention in terms of how they're structuring or things that they can do to better position themselves outside of just the success of their brand or whatever their service is? But are there key things that they can do in terms of their positioning?
Well, this is super, super basic, but I mean, take a look at where you're operating. The states are behaving, you know, very, very differently right now from one to the next in terms of acquisitions and the value of licenses. And I do think as time goes on, we're going to be getting more and more to a place where there's lots and lots of licenses, and a lot of them just frankly aren't going to have big value unless you've got strong fundamentals, you know, strong operations, you've got a great brand and you're just doing great and somebody wants to acquire that. But like, you know, just kind of like the more run of the mill, hey, I got a license. You know, in a lot of states right now, like there's not really even much of a market for those, right? So, you know, where are you operating, right? And then
saturated, are you in and what license do you have? Because there are areas where, you know, there are going to be some that are more coveted than others.
Absolutely. And it does change state by state, depending on how that state is structured. So, you know, just getting a license like anywhere in the country isn't going to be like, a ticket to wealth. Certainly not. And it's a very hard road, right? It's a very hard road. You need to raise a lot of money to operate.
And the license isn't even half of it, right? Like that's, you know, like, that's one piece, but then you got to deal with real estate, and then you got to deal with equipment, and then you got to deal with. So the license for some is the easy part.
Right. I mean, I think that that's right. Right. Get the license. You know, if your goal is to sell, make sure you're in a good market for that. And I think that things are going to be changing, right? Like in 3 years, like markets that are really good right now are going to look more like, you know, some of the saturated ones. So, you know, there's definitely like an expiration date on some of this stuff, but yeah. And then getting the capital in and then just, you know, being a very strong operator and very good corporate governance, making sure that you've got all your I's dotted and your T's crossed, that you are, you know, making sure you're filing everything you need to file, like really basic things like that.
Make it easy for them. To like
exactly
really want to think about, I mean, if you're asking for like a premium price on this, right? If you want premium value, then it's almost like you want a house that's move-in ready. You want, you know, that company that may acquire you wants to be able to come in and like already have a tenant. You know what I'm saying? Versus, oh, I have to gut this room, I need to move that wall. You know,
I feel like and your financials are critical, like having good financial hygiene, making sure you're working with a really good accountant so that your historical financials are in great shape, even if they're not like numbers wise, especially when you start aren't going to be in great shape, but they're solid. They make sense. They cover everything. And then your pro formas, like, you know, making sure that they're tied to reality. And yeah, like, you know, the better performance you can show there that's true and this is how we achieve it, the higher you're gonna get in for an offer to acquire.
I guess it just boils down to make sure you have your shit together. You know, the more that you have it together, the better off you will be viewed, you know, and it's also just better for you because, you know, these regulations are not stoic. Like there are developments. And so in order to stay in compliance, you know, you need to make sure that you know where everything is and how it applies.
Right. Or know what you don't know and have a good team around you and fill those gaps in.
Yeah. Yep. And we talked about that a couple of episodes ago. If you missed it, you should go back. But we talked about the things to consider when building your team, you know, and who do you need to make sure that like from the get-go, you know, you pay that money early, but these are the people who are going to save you time and energy and money in the long run. So an accountant, a good attorney, like these are pieces of the team. These are pieces of the team.
Yes.
Okay, O'Brien. Well, thank you so much. You know, we could keep going, but I'm not going to keep you. But so thank you so much again. I'm always learning something and putting things in a different perspective. So
I'm so happy to do this. It's fun.
All right. Hey, till next time, y'all. Stay blunt.